resources. It is bilingual. More information at chirla.org.
Donating your car or boat is an excellent way to help KPFK stay alive and on air. All you have to do is call 877-KPFK-AUTO, that's 877-KPFK-AUTO, and we'll take care of everything.
You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles.
From the icy cold curves of Angeles Crest to the sunny shores of PCH and around the world on kpfk.org, this is The Car Show, broadcasting every Saturday from 1 to 2 p.m. here on KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles for over 52 years. Coming up on 53 at some point, I am your humble host, Mark Vaughn of AutoWeek.com. I am joined this week and every week now by a man whose resume would require most of the show to fully cover, but he is today wearing a Super Street shirt, which we appreciate, and if we had a TV show, you would be able to see, but you'll just have to take my word for it. And that is, in fact, where he started. He was founding editor at Super Street. He's been editor at Edmunds, an analyst at KBB, and now executive analyst at iccars.com. Please welcome Carl Brower. Carl.
Hey, thank you, Mark, for including me yet again in the car show, and looking forward to all the exciting things we're going to talk about this week. Thank you.
All right, and this week we are joined once again by our friend and colleague from the Great Northwest, a real reporter covering Volkswagen, Audi, Bentley, Lamborghini, Porsche, Scout, auto startups, and future product pipeline for Automotive News. He's a lifelong car enthusiast. This sounds like the dating game. He's a lifelong car enthusiast and spent his formative years reading Auto Week. Please welcome Jack Walsworth. Jack, welcome.
Thanks, Mark. Carl, great to see you.
Hey. Great. Glad you're here, man.
Yeah. Our staff attorney will be back next week, we hope, if she doesn't enjoy her time off too much and just does not come back. But we expect her to come back. Of course, Michelle Spencer, not here tonight. So we're operating without adult supervision. God help us. Let's just dive right into it. We got calendar items first. And tonight, right in Glendale, which is not far from the studios here at KPFK, the Glendale Cruise Night is a big annual event. And it happens tonight, July 19th, from 5:30 p.m. to 10:30 p.m. on Brand Boulevard. It is the 30th annual Cruise Night, bringing together some of the finest looking vintage and unique automobiles Southern California. It's nestled in the heart of Brand Boulevard, which, as you know, if you've ever been there, it's loaded with car dealerships. So, maybe they'll be closed so you can like wander around the lot and look at, window stickers without having to be dragged into the showroom and, cornered and forced to make some kind of deal. Next thing you know, you're walking out with a lease on a Hyundai. But, okay. So that's going to be going on tonight, 5:30 to 10:30 p.m. on Brand Boulevard in Glendale. They're promising over 45,000 people in attendance, 300 to 400 cars, all pre-1985 classics, modified imports, exotics. It's all going to be there tonight, 5:30 to 10:30 on Brand Boulevard in Glendale. Also tonight, now I did not know Sammy V. He was a well-regarded hot rodder. And this is an event in memory of him. Sammy V's last ride is tonight, 5 to 7 p.m. You gather at 1035 11th Street in Huntington Beach. Park around the perimeter of the park. That's a big park in Huntington Beach. So park all your hot rods around the perimeter of the park. And then at 7:30 p.m., everybody's going to cruise on down PCH into the sunset in memory of Sammy V. So he's up there in hot rod heaven. We'll have a good time looking down at you guys in your hot rods. Who wants to go to Paris Auto Speedway? Jack, you want to do that one?
Sure. So this is also tonight at Paris Auto Speedway on the Lake Paris Fairgrounds. They're going to be hosting 12 races on the schedule. So lots to see. Looks like it is a ticketed event. Prices are $38 for adults. Kids ages 6 to 12 are $12. So if you've got kiddos, take them with you. And seniors, $33.
I qualify.
There you go. Even better. There's going to be some National Sprint Car Hall of Famers there, which that's always a good time. And it is located at 18700 Lake Paris Drive in Paris, California. Now, Mark, where is Paris, California?
Don't get it confused with Paris, France, although they are very similar. Paris is way out there in the Inland Empire. So if you're in L.A., plan on a long drive to get there. Now, that'll be a lot. There won't be much traffic on a Saturday out there. But, it's way the heck out there. Tonight, they're going to have the Avanti USAC CRA sprint cars. Those are the big things with the big engines and the big tires. They will also have PASCAR Super and Factory Stocks, WRA Vintage Racing. And then next week, this is the most fun of all, the LKQ Pick Your Part Night of Destruction and Democross. Ooh. That is next Saturday, July 26th. Figure eights, trailer figure eights, mini stocks, and double deckers. We are still trying to get funding for the car show double decker. I think one of us will be up on top doing the steering, and then the guy in the car down below operates the pedals. So what could possibly go wrong with that? So tonight, they got actual real racing out of Paris Auto Speedway for only $38. Go check them out. 18700 Lake Paris Drive in Paris, and that's Perris. It's a good track. It's a clay track, half-mile clay oval. The grandstands are new, modern things. They're not rickety old wooden things that you see like in Cars 2 or something like that. This is a nice place with concessions, cement. You're walking on cement. You're not walking in dirt. And it's got a good sound system, too. So check that out. Who has or has ever owned a BMW E30? Okay, Carl, you take that one. You take this next one.
So I've never owned an E30, but I love them, and I do love old BMW 3 Series. I'm a massive fan for E46s. I've now had three of them in the last like couple of years, so I've got a bit of an affliction now. But this is for E30s. That's two generations earlier, and still a fabulous car. And this is tomorrow morning, 8 to 11 a.m. the E30 meetup, and that's at 2481 South Lincoln Boulevard. It's right near Venice, where they're partying with the Wander Well Society in Venice Beach for all the E30s, and they have a workshop. So cruise on by, check out the E30 meetup down there. If you've got a 3 Series built between 1982 and 94, that's a 12-year window you got there, you qualify for the E30 meetup. And all those older 3 Series are just fabulous cars. Driving dynamics are fabulous.
They'll probably let you in with an E36 or anything, you know. I don't think they're going to really turn anybody away. But if you have an E30, this is your moment. Don't miss it. All right. Speaking of moments, Wings and Wheels at the Cable Airport. It sounds like fun. It sounds like a casual gathering. It's a regular thing. They have several of them throughout the year. The Cable Airport is a small airport you probably never heard of at 1749 West 13th Street in Upland, California. There will be airplanes and cars at this place. Everybody likes airplanes too, right? Hosted by Maniac Mike's Cafe. That alone is reason to drive out to Ontario. Information, wingsandwheels@gmail.com. That's July 20th, 8 to 10 a.m. Let's scroll down a little bit. We have way too many events here, and I'm actually skipping over a couple of them. Carl, how about State of Speed? You want to do that? That sounds like something you might know.
Yeah, another early morning, Sunday morning event, State of Speed, Los Angeles, 7 to 10 a.m. tomorrow morning. And it's collaborating this month with Gersatz Customs, which is...
Gas Rats.
Sorry. I read that wrong. That's not the most normal spelled word, but Gas Rats Customs to once again take over the lot at the Tire Co. headquarters in Gardenia. It used to be Nissan headquarters, for anyone who remembers.
Yeah, hey, Carl, did that ever say Datsun on that building?
It probably did once upon
a
time.
I didn't move here until
the 90s, but I bet it did.
I grew up here, and I think it said Datsun, and then it said Nissan. And now it says Tire Co. That's less a less ignominious end for that building than what used to be the one down in Irvine that housed the, what was it, Lincoln Mercury and Jag and Land Rover and Ford. Premier Automotive Group. Yeah. That became a donut headquarters. It's actually Taco Bell and some kind of donut company. So good for them. Good for them.
How the mic has fallen. Yes. But they're looking to have an outstanding representation of American muscle and classic vehicles in the spotlight section. So if you want to send them a direct message with a photo of your vehicle for consideration, they're all are welcome. Show cars, street cars, off-road rigs, you name it, they're going to be there. Stop by 7 to 10 a.m. and check out some of the awesome cars and grab a fresh brew and breakfast burritos by Artsy Brews. So that's again where's the address on here? Oh,
it's 500.
Yep. What? Yeah, 500 West 190th Street, Suite 600, Gardena, California 90248. Just if you ever knew where the Nissan, Datsun, or Tire Co. headquarters are, any one of those three, you got the right building.
Yep, that's good. And Jack is going to take us down to another bunch of old timey cruise ins next, Jack.
Yep. So every Friday at Bob's Big Boy Burbank hosts Southern California's best classic car show. The next one will be July 25th. That's every Friday from 4 to 10 p.m. And that is at 4211 West Riverside Drive in Burbank. And I'm pretty sure these are the famous big boys that we see in the movies and everything. You know, as someone that doesn't live in LA, I think that this is the one, right? This is like the classic American.
The fiberglass boy is holding up the tray with the burner on it out the front. Yep, that's the one.
I will make it next time I'm in town. And then there's also cruises every Friday at Bob's Big Boy in Northridge. That's located at 8876 Corbin Avenue at Nordhoff Way in Northridge. And if you don't like Bob, every Friday night in Burbank at Foster's Freeze, there is a cruise night. And that is on 201 South Glen Oaks Boulevard in Burbank from 7 to 9 with a cruise to follow after.
Very nice. And Carl, you're a drag racer, right? You want to do the drag race one?
As much as I can get away with it. Hey, look, and these are street legal drags, my favorite kind. So Friday the 25th at the Lake Paris Fairgrounds, back out to Paris, California. Don't go to France. All cars and trucks are welcome to open Test and Tune. Come out for some drag racing food and summer night fun. And there's a tech racer gate, tech gate that you're going to get checked out at 4 p.m. And then I think at 5:45, the staging lanes are open. And by 6 p.m., you're starting to race. And it's $40 for a street car, $50 for a trailered car, and $25 if you want to ride along. And spectators are only $15, and adults are $10, and $10 for youth 6 to 12, and free if you're 5 years or younger. So free parking by gate C and preferred parking for $15 or even $25 trackside watch and park. So you can sit in your car, kind of like a drive-through. More tickets information is available at streetlegaldragway.com, streetlegaldragway.com. And this is 18,700 Lake Paris Drive, Paris, California, 92571.
Yeah, that's the same location basically as the Paris Auto Speedway. So they have a drag strip there. It is a 1/16th mile. You've heard of that out at the old Irwindale, they had 1/8th mile. So this is 330 feet. So it's over really quickly. But, you know, they have a lot of them. They can do it a lot. So and we got to support whenever any racetrack left in Southern California. You know, if you
plus you can tell
around
people really great times. You can say, "Man, I went to the drag strip and pulled like a 3.2 second. I got 3.2 second at the drag strip." And don't mention how long the race was.
Yeah, no one needs to know the awful truth. All right, this is another one that I found on Instagram. I know nothing about this group, but it sounds like fun. A group called Big Time has a movie night at the Peterson on Saturday, July 26th. You're going to go in and see Too Fast, Too Furious at the Peterson. Roll in at 6 p.m. Movie starts at 8 p.m. I know absolutely not. I don't know where they're going to show it at the Peterson. I don't know if it's going to be shown up on the wall of the building or if they're going to go inside and put up a screen. And I asked and nobody knew there. So it sounds like fun, though. Too Fast, Too Furious. Remember, that's the one without Dom. So if you do not like Dom for any reason, but you do like, you know, Paul and all the others, then this is the one to see. Too Fast, Too Furious. Is that, how does that rank it among you guys as on the Fast and Furious iconography? Where's number two?
I feel like it's up higher. I liked it. The first few were my favorite, and then they kind of went off the rails. But I mean, the cars are so like nostalgic for me. So it's up there for sure.
Yeah, I saw it. I remember Mitsubishi. They had a heavy presence in that movie, and Deb Pollock, you probably remember her, Mark. She used to be the Mitsubishi PR girl, and she took us out to see that movie for free. Took a whole group of us. And I remember at the time being like, you know, you missed all the crew except Paul Walker and introduced a bunch of new guys. But it's kind of grown on me. I've gone back and watched it since. And it's like, oh, yeah, this one's actually pretty good.
I got a chance to interview one of the Mitsubishi drivers for that movie when that came out. I mean, the way the Hollywood machine goes is it's a little bit. Sometimes a movie, they invite you to everything. Other times you never hear. You don't get invited at all. But that was kind of fun. I got to go and see that, check that out. And again, you know, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with Dom. I'm just saying that you don't have to see him if you don't like him in this movie. So it's a good one. And actually, my favorite of all those is three, Tokyo Drift. Everybody hates Tokyo Drift. They love to hate Tokyo Drift. But it has sort of had a story, you know, and
yeah.
I don't know, man. I liked it. So
Dom's in that one for like 20 seconds.
Yeah, at the very end. Come on, man. Who are we fooling?
Yeah.
He had some kind of contractual obligation to show up for that. But anyway. Okay. So that's July 26th at the Peterson Automotive Museum. Everybody's going to start arriving at 6. Movie starts at 8. You can't beat it. I don't know how much it costs. I'm sure it costs something. They didn't say. We couldn't find out, but we had to let you know about it. It sounds too good not to talk about. Down to the South Bay now, Manhattan Beach Cars and Coffee, Saturday, July 26th from 6 to 10 a.m., happening at 850 South PCH in El Segundo. So you just go down Rosecrans there, or you go down PCH, and it's, I think, the northeast corner of that intersection. You get to see a whole bunch of cool cars and coffees. Magnuson Superchargers. Carl, do you have a couple of those on some of your cars?
I don't think it's a Magnuson Supercharger. I think it's an Eaton Supercharger my 23 Dodge Demon 170, but I do love a good supercharger. There's nothing wrong with superchargers.
Magnuson Superchargers has a car show Saturday, July 26th from 10 to 2, right at the manufacturing facility in Ventura. So that's a bit of a drive, but you need a reason to go out and drive somewhere. And you've got most of the day there, 10 to 2 o'clock. So you don't have to get up early to make it up there. That location is 1990 Knoll Drive, K-N-O-L-L Drive in Ventura, 93003. And then back down my neck of the woods, Carcadia Route 66. That is the show. It's like just a regular gathering of cars and coffee, but we just like the name so much, Carcadia, because it takes place in Arcadia. See, that is July 27th from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. at 733 West Naomi in Arcadia. And then let's see what else. Oh, Shore Shifters Cars and Coffee down in Long Beach. And now I'm mispronouncing the name, according to Michelle. I say Juanipero Beach in Long Beach. Apparently it's pronounced, I don't know. She had it right the other, but on the traffic reporters say Juanipero when they're talking about anyway, that this is a Cars and Coffee in Long Beach, fourth Sunday of every month, which this month will be July 27th, 8 to 10 a.m. It's right by the Long Beach Museum of Art. $2 parking fee. Always a nice gathering of cars for that. I'm just going to scroll through because we're out of time. What else do we need in the calendar? We'll talk about it all next week. We're going to dive over to the news section, and we are lucky, like I said, to have an actual reporter here, Jack. Jack, why don't you start us out on Scout and what's going on there? Because that's one of the that's on your beat.
Yes, yes. So Scout is a startup funded by Volkswagen Group. For those that may think, oh, Scout sounds like a familiar name, it is. It dates back to the International Harvester Scout from the 60s, kind of one of the original SUVs of, you know, what became an American craze. Long story short, Volkswagen, through one of their units, bought a heavy truck company, which was the predecessor of International Harvester, and got the IP to Scout. So Volkswagen Group is launching Scout Motors as an all-new company. It is backed by Volkswagen Group, but Volkswagen Group and Scout say Scout is independent, which you might think, okay, that's you know, new car companies pop up every now and then. But the big thing is, and the big drama here, is Scout wants to sell their vehicles direct to consumer, which in some states is allowed. Many states it is not, because state dealer associations are pretty strong. A lot of states have laws that protect franchise dealers that have been on the books for decades. So, you know, a lot of companies have tried to sell direct to consumer in this country. Very few have been successful. What makes Scout interesting is that they are tied to a traditional automaker, Volkswagen. Obviously, Volkswagen Group has dealers in the U.S. between Volkswagen brand, Audi, Bentley, Lamborghini, etc. So a lot of Volkswagen Group dealers are upset that they won't have the opportunity to sell Scouts in dealerships, because Scout is pursuing a direct sales model. As you can imagine, this has not gone over well with the dealer community, with lobby groups, things like that. There's already been a couple lawsuits in the U.S. against Scout, including one from the California New Car Dealers Association. This is a long preamble, but the news today, news last week was that Scout had asked the U.S. government to basically take all steps necessary to eliminate state motor vehicle franchise laws, calling them, quote, burdensome restrictions on competition. Because like I said, Scout is trying to find that path to sell their vehicles direct to consumer and without a dealer partner. So this was actually submitted back in May to the Department of Justice's Anti-Competitive Regulations Task Force, which was launched in March after the president kind of made a couple of executive orders saying that he wanted to ease the burden of regulations on American consumers. So basically, Scout in this letter kind of issued all of their grievances that they have with the dealership franchise model, kind of, again, explain why they think direct-to-consumer is the best choice for them. Scout, to their credit, has said, you know, there's nothing wrong with dealers. We think it works for other brands, but it's not the path we want to take. We want to be direct-to-consumer. Back in October, when Scout first showed their vehicles, they also showed us, the media, Mark was there as well in Nashville, how they want to sell, service, and kind of have that customer interaction. So Scout's definitely going, they want to emulate the things that Tesla has done, very online heavy. They want you to be able to buy a SUV or a pickup truck off their app. They want to do a pretty seamless experience. You know, a couple times they said they want to make it as easy as buying a t-shirt, which if anyone has bought the vehicle, it's typically not that easy. It's been some time since I bought a car, but I would not compare it to buying a t-shirt off of Amazon. I haven't bought a Tesla, so maybe it's a little bit different experience. But yeah, so that's just another interesting ripple. Like I said, Scout and dealers have been pretty upset with Scout since October, basically, when they said they're going to pursue this direct-to-consumer sales. Like I mentioned, the California New Car Dealers filed a lawsuit. That was back in April because they believe Scout's plans, you know, go against what is in California state law. So this is, you know, a little bit different of a situation. It's not like a lawsuit or anything. It's just Scout submitted, you know, why they feel like the government needs to look into this.
Now, why would, I'm not fully grasping this. Is it possible that all politicians are getting huge contributions from car dealerships and car dealer groups? And that since those politicians get so much money from car dealer groups, that that might be influencing their, you know, actions in the legislature? Or is that too cynical a point of view?
That's, you know, probably a cynical point of view. You know, it's kind of hard. It's kind of hard to say. It's, you know, that's not a thought that a lot of people share that thought. I think a lot of people think, hey, these politicians are just doing what the car dealers want them to do. You know, I can't really speak too much onto that, but it is something that, you know, we've seen a lot of states. Here in Washington State, where I live, there was a bill introduced to allow for more direct-to-consumer sales vehicles. It didn't go anywhere. In South Carolina, where Scout is building their plant to make these vehicles, same thing, a bill was introduced. Again, it did not go, and it just kind of stalled out. So, you know, it is a little bit different in states where they haven't experienced this yet. So, you know, definitely stay tuned on that regard. You know, California is obviously a little bit different because of Tesla and
So do they, does Scout want to just, you would go down on their website, pick all the options you want and hit a button, and then they would deliver it to your house? Is that what their plan is, or do we know their plan yet?
I think we don't know like the entire plan. I think last year they told us they want it to be like something you could do on your phone, like on an app, complete the purchase. I believe you would have the opportunity to go to what they're calling stores to look at vehicles before, like, you make a purchase. Pretty sure like you could, if you bought a car, you could bring it back and like they could show you what to do and things like that. A lot of this stuff, when a new automaker comes out and they reveal the retail plans, you know, a lot can change between, you know, proposal and what happens in reality. But Scout has from the beginning said that they want a pretty seamless, easy experience for the consumer.
About service? Isn't that where most dealerships make all their money? And if something goes wrong with your car, you have to take it somewhere, right? Has Scout addressed that yet? I'm trying to remember last year when we were there.
Yeah, they did talk about it briefly. They want to have service centers from the onset that would be company owned. Scout also made some claims that a lot of the repairs could be done remotely, like a mobile unit could come out to your house and fix the car, which I guess, you know, if you're living in greater Los Angeles, sure. But if you're out, you know, up in Fort Bragg or like Mendocino, that would probably be a lot more tougher. I think we've seen this from other brands where they sell a lot of cars where they have these big volumes to begin with at the beginning. But then when it comes a year or two down the road, when these vehicles need service, you can see, you know, Tesla had some issues with that, with like people were backed up. I think Rivian has had the same thing where a lot of people buy the vehicles, and then when they need routine maintenance or service, then you kind of have to wait. So that is a big, dealers are quick to point out that you don't typically have that problem with the franchise model.
What other manufacturers are doing this? You mentioned Rivian. We all know Tesla does it. What other manufacturers are doing this, though?
You have Lucid would be one. Interesting, like Fisker and VinFast initially were going to go big on direct-to-consumer and then both switched. Obviously, Fisker no longer really exists. VinFast has switched to a dealership model. And we have seen in Europe, you know, there's been some companies that started doing one thing and a switch to more like a traditional model. But I mean, the three that exist would be Tesla, Rivian, and Lucid, you know, not necessarily the same across all states, but those are the three we can point to.
Those seem to be working. I mean, the world has not come to a halt because there are no dealers for those manufacturers.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, that's a big part of Scout's argument, I think, too, is that, hey, this works for some companies. It should work for us, but we'll see. I mean, it's kind of early days still because Scout's production is not going to start till 2027. And if one thing is true with the auto industry, a lot can happen in less than 2 years. So we'll see.
You think they're actually going to make it, Scout?
I mean, they got the financial backing, I think, to do it. And Volkswagen Group is very quick to point out on earnings calls or presentations that we think Scout is a way for us to grow market share in North America. You know, for decades now, Volkswagen Group has really wanted to increase market share. And the last couple of years, or last 6-8 months, their execs are really high on Scout. So we'll see.
Where is Scout going to be manufactured? Is it in the U.S.?
Yes. So their factory is in Blythewood, South Carolina, which is just outside of Columbia. So
they're immune from any future tariff requirements or anything?
Potentially. I mean, it depends if, like, you know, a lot of the parts, if those are all sourced from the U.S., then sure. But I know, like, the range extender, the engine is going to be built in Mexico. So depending on where our trade is with Mexico in a couple of years, that could be a tariff part, and that would be a bigger component. But, you know, definitely hard to say at this point what the tariff situation will look like when production starts.
All right. And speaking of electric cars, our buddy Carl has another good study coming from iccars.com. What do you have, Carl, about electric cars?
Yeah, so everyone knows that the incentives are officially now going away. They're vanishing on September 30th with the latest bill that was passed. And it's not just the incentive. A lot of people forget that not only are the incentives going away that try to make people buy them, but the mandates that try to make manufacturers have to produce them are also going away. So you had kind of a carrot and a stick. You were trying to tempt people to buy them with lower prices, and you were trying to force manufacturers to produce them with fines if they didn't. And both of those are going away. And before those went away, we already saw EV growth plateauing and kind of stalling at around 7% nationally. And we looked at like the used car supply because, you know, it's a basically a precursor, or it's an indicator of a new car. It's whatever is a new car is eventually a used car. So we looked, for instance, at year-over-year growth in the used car market for electric vehicles. And for instance, they went up 60, their share of the EV market, which is 1 to 5 year old used cars. We look at that. 1 to 5 year old used cars, their share of that used market went up 60.5% from 20 to 2021. And then we looked at it every year after that, June to June. So the next year in 22, 91.2%. So it almost doubled from 0.5% of that used car market to 0.9%. And 61.4% in 23, 97.3% in 24. So you had a lot of cars going into the 1 to 5 year old used car market in the 24. 25, 14.2%. So very little growth in the 1 to 5 year old used market for EVs from 24 to 25. And that resonates with the loss of growth in the new car market, which feeds to the used car market. So it just, that's just one of the things we looked at. And of course, we've also seen that EVs keep losing value. Their prices for pure EVs, they went down 4.8% in the past year from June 24 to June 25. 1 to 5 year old used cars prices dropped 4.8%. Gasoline cars broken out went up 5.2%. So all used cars on average have been going up the last couple months, and gasoline cars broken out go up even more. And EVs have been dropping for years, and they're still dropping even as every other kind of used car is going up. And then we looked at used cars that have lost the most value. Probably not a lot of surprise for all the things that are going on, but the Tesla Model S, Model X, and Model Y are in the first three rankings for all used cars that have lost the most value in the past year. Not all electric cars, all used cars. When you look at every used 1 to 5 year old used car, you look at which one's lost the most value over the past year, Tesla's got the first three spots. And then it's got number six with the Tesla Model 3. So all four of the cars are in the top six slots of most lost value for used cars. Again, all of this pre-incentive going away. So it just seems like every indication, and that's why listening about Scout's plans in 2 years to be out in 2027, I think you're going to always have a certain amount of buyers who want EVs. Clearly, they're the fan base. But I think the growth of them has not only stalled, but I think when you take away both the mandates to produce them and the incentives to buy them, I could easily see market share, new car EV market share contracting back down to, say, 5%. And just
you think it's going to go down? So it's about 10% now, though, isn't it? Did you say?
No, it's 7%, Mark. It's 7%.
7% of new car?
Of nationally, new car sales, 7%. And I think it got up to like 8% for like a month. You can always pick, you know, well, this 4 week period or this 8 week period. And a lot of times, you know,
nationally here in the People's Republic of California, we have a much higher percentage of electric vehicles, sure. Right?
So, right, where it's warm year round, where there's a good infrastructure,
right, the Sun Belt.
Yeah, so you now in Minnesota, in Minneapolis, and in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, not as high a percentage as in California's market share for EVs. So,
right.
Where it gets cold, big chunks of the year, where there's very little fast charger options, these kind of things, and honestly, where people drive further distances. You know, they don't sit around at 0 to 8 miles an hour on the 405 for big chunks of their life. They sit on the I-80 for 3 hours when they want to go visit their relatives, and they go 80 miles an hour and stuff for three hours straight. So
infrastructure's growing all the time, Carl. It's coming. EVs are coming.
I know. There's like five more fast chargers with a couple billion that the government spent. We got
at least five. Yes, very efficient system there. All right, good. So now's the time to buy a used EV, right?
It is. If they work for your lifestyle, you should probably still shouldn't buy one if you live in Minneapolis or Jackson Hole. But if you live in a
but
place...
our listeners here in Southern California, good time to buy a used EV, right?
Sure. Yeah, if it works for your lifestyle, the prices are only going to keep getting better. Don't buy a new one, though. They tend to lose a lot of value.
Yeah. Well, a lot of cars do. But yeah, they do tend to lose a lot of value. Okay. Thank you for that report, Carl. Let's roll on. Let's see. I have something, believe it or not, from AutoWeek.com. Speaking of, we're staying with an all-electric news section today. We started out with Scout. Carl's talking about electric vehicle study. And I am looking at Lucid, the obviously a battery electric vehicle. They are going to have a hands-free driving. It's now become this topic has become one of the more popular advanced driver assistance systems features over the years. It's working its way into the technology lineups of luxury models. Advanced driver assistance systems, of course, is a phalanx of things, a whole bunch of different things, you know, from blind spot monitoring to automatic emergency braking and everything. But one of the things under that category is hands-free driving. Now, Tesla, of course, has been promising. Actually, it says full self-driving. It said that on its website forever, and it wasn't really full self-driving. It was level 2 driving. But the ability to drive without keeping one's hands on the steering wheel is now expected in many types of vehicles, along with systems that ensure their safe use. This is according to my colleague, Jay Ramey at AutoWeek.com. And as part of Lucid's Dream Drive Pro suite of ADAS features, the company is now adding hands-free drive assist and hands-free lane change assist via an over-the-air update to the Air sedan starting July 30th. And I got to believe that the Gravity's coming. Owners of Lucid Gravities are next in line to receive the updates in the coming months, Lucid says. And we quote Kay Stepper, Vice President of Advanced Driving Assist Systems and Autonomous Driving at Lucid. She says, the addition of these features to Lucid's Dream Drive Pro offers a glimpse into the future that Lucid is building with the impressive capabilities of our software-defined vehicles. So Lucid's Dream Drive is technically still an SAE Level 2 system, analogous in this manner to Tesla's Autopilot or what is it? Cadillac's, what's Cadillac's called?
Super Cruise.
And Tesla, which I guess they're still calling full self-driving. It's like that, with both requiring driver attention to the road at all times, even if the drivers can keep their hands off the steering wheel for varying lengths of time. So that's kind of cool. I think Carl and I, and I don't know if Jack, if you've driven the Lucid Gravity, but that seems like that's a real game changer. I drove it up when they had a launch program up in Santa Ynez, and I just had a blast in that thing. That was, I think that's, once that hits the market as it's hitting, I guess now or very soon, it's Lucid is, that could be the deal maker for Lucid. And just this hands-free driving is yet another thing to consider when you're looking at Lucid. So that's fun. And that might actually work. So good for Lucid. Looking forward to the future. Now it's time to look at cars that we have right now. So let's just go down the list. Jack has been sitting on this GTI story for weeks and now finally gets to tell his thoughts on the Volkswagen GTI. Jack?
Yeah, so I just spent a week with a 2025 GTI. These were refreshed for the 2025 model year. So they have... big news was physical buttons back on the steering wheel. So no more haptic. You got old school physical volume, physical switches, all that good stuff. So that was a big part of the refresh. Also has a new infotainment screen, which is quite a bit snappier. Like most of the Volkswagen infotainments for the past couple of years have been a little laggy from what we gather. So it's more focused on the interior experience than so much driving. That it still looks like a Golf GTI. The exteriorly didn't change that much. The one I was in was finished in moonstone gray, which was a very sharp color. It's almost like a like a gray chalk. I don't think this was a Porsche inspired color, but definitely looked pretty snazzy. Black and cheer with gray. So, you know, it's pretty fun. GTIs are always a good time. You know, the manual no longer exists, so it's just an automatic, which obviously the enthusiast crowd is bummed about, but it's still a fun drive. I actually took it out to Yakima, Washington, which is about 2.5 hours east of Seattle in the high desert, and past the sign that said Yakima is the Palm Springs of Washington. So can confirm it was super hot, super sunny. It did feel a little bit like Palm Springs. It was about 100 degrees.
Did you find a curve?
I-82 had some pretty good turns here and there. I was pleasantly.
And what was it like to drive the GTI?
It's good. You know, it's a little skateboardish, I would say. I think, you know, it's not very like, it's a smooth ride. It's not the comfiest thing you ever drove because the tires are pretty thin. But yeah, I mean, it's easy to park. It's easy to maneuver around in the city environment here in Seattle. It's great because there's hardly ever any parking. And if there's parking, you have to parallel park. So, you know, it seems like a very usable, fun, everyday car. Only drawback, pricing on this one after shipping was $42,295, which
yikes.
This is a mid-level GTI trim. So this would be Autobahn. There's one below and one above it. So you could, in theory, spend even more. And this is obviously still below the Golf R. So, you know, I think the days of the GTI kind of being like the quote-unquote affordable hot hatch we're probably unfortunately past those. I know prices of all cars have gone up, but that $42,000 for a GTI does seem tough to swallow. But I mean, it is super fun. You know, these are the kind of cars I think Volkswagen is when it's at its best is producing, because it kind of goes back to its enthusiast roots. The Golf obviously goes back generations. It's just a fun car. And if you've driven a Golf, even just a regular Golf, you know, you kind of want to talk about GTIs even more so. My personal car is a Golf Alltrack, and I got back in it after I parked the GTI, and the other part of me was like, okay, this, you know, you can kind of see the Golf stuff throughout all of them. But yeah, you know, GTIs are a good time. It's cool if we still get them, because Volkswagen no longer sells the regular Golfs here in the U.S., so these aren't huge volume vehicles, so the fact that they're still bringing them here, obviously the enthusiast community is still buying them. So, you know, I haven't seen too many of the new ones running around town yet, but yeah, it was a good time. And
About 3 years ago, this was at the tail end of COVID, Volkswagen had this press fleet that they had to just, you know, disperse among and I got a GTI for, I think, 3 or 4, 5, 6 months, something like that. I just had the best time in that thing. It was the most practical thing because it had lots of room for cargo. You could fold the back seats down and just carry whatever you needed, fold them up. You could carry 5 people, but if there's nobody in the car, you just had a blast driving in it. It was so much fun, so engaging.
Right.
So I wouldn't fault really anything with the car itself, but like so many, we were talking the other day about the ID Buzz, it's just priced out of the market, and it sounds like the GTI is priced out of the market. It sounds like this might appeal to a young enthusiast driver. But who has $42,000 if you're, you know, going to college or just out of college or something?
Right.
Yeah. You know, that's a lot of dough.
Right. And that kind of lies the challenge for Volkswagen. But we'll see. I mean, the GTI obviously still has a big following, and, you know, there's reason they're still selling them. But to your point, yeah, it is quite a bit pricier. But yeah,
what's interesting is that's all that's left, right? There's been so many different versions of the Golf. There was the Sport Wagon, the TDI diesel versions, the regular Golf. There was an electric Golf for a while. That was like their, you know, 3 Series. It was like this wide range of body style sedans and stuff you could get. And then all of a sudden, it's just the Golf GTI. Everything else, which I'm assuming is because they couldn't get profit. I think the GTI is the most expensive one. And they can sell that for a profit in the U.S. after all the importing and everything else that has to go through to be sold here. And I don't think any of the other lower priced versions of the Golf made financial sense for them. I don't think they made enough profit to justify it. So we're down to just that one that's left.
Yeah, I just looked up something here. Our friends over at Motor One had a story saying that GTI sales have fallen off a cliff. So, you know, you've got the Taos and the Tiguan that are really carrying the brand here in the United States, as crossover utility vehicles are for everybody. But right. The hot hatches have suffered double-digit decreases, with front-wheel drive model plummeting 21% to just 1,892 cars sold. And it was even worse for the all-wheel drive R, which dropped by, 37.6% to 770 units. This is in the first quarter of 2025. That's, I would say that's unsustainable. And it's a little bit for us and our enthusiast listeners. It's tragic. You know, that, as Carl said, and I, you know, Carl, and remember the first one, we remember the first GTI when it came out. It was exciting. It was fun. It was like the German tuner car that you could afford and you could have a blast in it. And now it's 42 grand, man. That's a lot. That's a lot.
So we'll see. One thing that's interesting with the Gulfs is they're the GTI and the R are both made in Germany. But Gulf production is supposed to ship to Mexico in a few years. So be curious if that, if they still bring the GTI and the R into the US, because who knows what the tariff situation will be like in a few years' time. But, you know, maybe the pricing gets looked at. I don't know, but it does seem like the Gulf still plays, even if sales are down some role in the America.
I think a European buyer is far more likely to spend that much money on a car like this. An American buyer expects a lot more for that much money. But I don't know. I'm not in product planning. I'm responsible for the ID Buzz being here because I kept pestering German executives to build it. And so they did, and now they're not selling very well either. Yep. So. But the Tiguan and the Taos, right? Those are doing well in the U.S.
Yep, so. I've got a Tiguan here as my next ride from the press fleet. So stay tuned for my thoughts on it.
Very good, very good. From the somewhat previously affordable GTI to the completely unaffordable, we go to Carl and his most recent supercar experience. Carl.
Yes, speaking of cars that are maybe not so affordable, and if you look at the sales numbers, they're probably not super high, but in this case, it's okay. It's supposed to be triple digit sales for these cars every year. This is the 2025 McLaren Artura Spider, and I drove this car as a coupe about 2 years ago in 23 when it was launched. I went on the press launch up in Las Vegas. Really enjoyed the car, and I think the best part about the car is that it gives me hope for the future of supercars and performance, even in an electrified world, as we're calling it, because this is McLaren's first hybrid supercar. First high volume hybrid supercar. Everyone out there screaming P1, P1. Yes, the McLaren P1 was the first hybrid supercar they made. They made like 10 of them, and they cost like $2 million. I mean, they made more and they didn't cost quite that much, but they were not really meant for normal people or even sort of abnormal rich people. But the Artura Spider and the Artura Coupe are made for abnormal rich people and selling in, you know, hundreds versus tens. And I love the fact that with a retractable hardtop and a 7.4 kilowatt hour battery and an electric motor, it's like the size of a dinner plate, by the way. It's very impressive how small these motors are getting and how torquey they are in spite of their size. But with all those components added in, this car still comes in under 3,500 pounds. And anyone who knows me has heard me constantly rail about this. But if you're telling me that a car is supposed to go around corners and be fun and entertaining and engaging, that's my weight limit. 30. The first number has to be a 3, and ideally a 2, really, but certainly a 3. And the second number has to be a 5 or lower. So I always use my 05 Ford GT, which I think was 3580. And it's like, okay, that one made the cut, and it was definitely fun around corners. And that's basically my upper limit for what a car can weigh. And I still want to drive it and engage with it. And by the way, I don't care what lap times are, Nürburgring. I want to drive a car that is engaging and fun to drive, and wrestling a near 2-ton vehicle around corners, no matter how fast it supposedly is and how great of lap times it pulls on any given track, has no interest to me. I'd rather have a Miata at that point than some 2-ton plus pig. So with that, with Carl's very extreme and angry discussion about how too many cars weigh too much that are performance cars, McLaren Artura Spider doesn't suffer my wrath at 34, 39 pounds for a retractable hardtop hybridized supercar. Very fun. Hydraulic assisted, not electronic assisted steering. So great steering feel. 0 to 60 in 3 seconds. Quarter mile in 10.8 seconds. 0 to 124 miles an hour. That's 200 kilometers an hour. So the Europeans like to use that. 8.4 seconds. Top speed 205 miles per hour. So it's got every performance metric you expect from a pricey supercar, and it does it all with a hybrid drivetrain. And it's a twin turbocharged 3-liter V6, and it does have a pretty cool exhaust note. It doesn't sound as much as you might like a V8. The V8s are still going to be a deeper burble, but it's got a cool exhaust note, and it looks good, handles well, and you can go 11 miles on a pure electric charge without using internal combustion at all. And finally, my favorite thing about this car, the handler, when he dropped it off, told me, he said, if you put it in track mode, it'll charge the battery while you drive. Because the idea is that when you're on a racetrack, it wants that battery and the electric motor's torque available every time you accelerate out of a corner and go fast. So it stores battery energy anytime you're not coming out of a corner and hitting the gas hard. Anytime you're braking or coasting, it's fully trying to charge the battery. It never wants that battery out of energy on a track. But if you drive it from, say, Los Angeles to Orange County, like I did a couple days ago, and the battery level was almost dead because I was using the EV, the electric mode, to move around at slow speed Los Angeles, and it was perfect for that, it charged almost entirely. It got to 94% from 0% or like 2%. It was barely had any charge. It got up to 94% driving it back in track mode. And I just think that is so cool. Now, it probably wasn't getting the best gas mileage because, of course, at that point, it's literally it's like pulling the e-brake, like one click up on your e-brake. It's putting a drag on the drivetrain to charge it when you're doing that. So it's going to hurt fuel efficiency, but it completely kicked up the battery charge. And I just think it's so cool. You never even have to plug it in if you don't want it. Just pay more for your gas and you can charge it while you drive.
So I drove that same car exactly a year ago in on the Route Napoléon in the south of France. And I got a chance. It was just me in the car. I didn't have to share it with, Eisenstein or anybody. I had the thing all to myself. And so I was going as fast as I wanted. And this that route, I'm sure you guys have been on it, is very narrow, squiggly, tight turns. The route that Napoleon took when he came back and said, okay, this time for sure. But it is... there is a road up there, and it was just a blast. And I agree with everything Carl said. It was so much fun to drive, and you could you can put the top down while it's still going, I think up to like 30 miles an hour or something. And we were staying in Monaco, right at the Hotel de Paris, as one does. And I'm going up the what's the name of the hill that they go up on the race course? Sandevaux.
It's a good hill.
It's a good hill. So as I'm going out, it's like, bumper to bumper traffic, because Monte Carlo, in case you're planning a vacation here, is now just totally overwhelmed by tourists. It's not like it was in the old days. We like to say genteel cut of humanity like to say. So I'm going up this hill, and I thought, well, I should really have the top down. And so I am creeping up the hill, and it's packed with tourists. And I flip the switch, and the top starts coming down. And, I wanted to just stand up and explain, no, it's not my car. I'm not a rich, oligarch. I'm just a guy. But I didn't say that and went up. But it does. The top works great. It's really nice. And the Artura is indeed a daily drivable car that, when you push it, will return just a blast. You'll have a really good time when you drive this thing. So it's a nice mixture of... of daily driver and supercar. And McLaren, I think, does it as good as anybody else. So if you, you agree, Carl?
I would 100%. They're a brand that's on the rise in a category that for most consumers means probably very little to them, because they aren't inexpensive cars. But in that rarefied air of, six-figure cars, there's been a lot of nameplates around for decades that are very well known, a lot of them from Italy and end in the letter I. McLaren is a much newer, younger brand as a car producer. They've been around since Bruce McLaren won the 1966
Le Mans,
24-hour Le Mans. And so he started that company. He's got an impressive history, and the company's got an impressive history building other people's cars, helping them engineer their cars, building race cars, building the F1, the McLaren F1, my favorite car of all time from the 90s. But they didn't start producing cars for supercar buyers, you know, high volume supercar buyer customers until I think it was 2012 with the MP4 12C. It was a terrible name. And they shortened
it. It was a terrible name, but boy, that was an amazing car. That was a real eyeball opener. When I got in that thing and drove it, I think the introduction was at the old California Speedway. Remember that track, you guys? It was, and they had a road course out there, and it was just, it was otherworldly. You know, it was a different take on the supercar. It was not like a Ferrari. It was not like a Lamborghini. It was just pure handling. And that stuck with me, that MP4 12C. So
yeah, I would say that McLaren, that car and McLaren in general, were kind of like the impact the first gen NSX had. Remember, that came out in the early 90s. And right. I always felt like you could almost hear all the design and engineering studios in various parts of Italy going, and even in maybe Stuttgart or going, because, you know, they were not happy because that NSX came out and it cost less than all of them. And it had basically better engineering and had really good performance. And they all had to go back and up their game after the NSX came out. And I feel like McLaren is kind of doing that to the supercar category again.
McLaren remains distinct in that category. You know, Ferrari has fantastic handling, no question about it, but is also more, it can also be a more comfortable car. You know, Lamborghini is styling and power and loudness, but McLaren, if you want to go around a corner, you it's really tough to beat a McLaren. I still am shaking from a couple years ago driving the McLaren Senna at Estoril. That was the scariest supercar drive I've ever done in my life because everything's so lightweight on that car. I remember they had the parts laid out on a table. You could pick up the front fender and it was like picking up a piece of paper. You know, it was like your high school math test or something.
Yeah.
It was incredible. And that's just their approach. And as you said, Carl, the curb weight is remains, even in this Artura Spider, which is perhaps a more comfortable approach to the supercar on McLaren's part. It still is very lightweight and very responsive. And if I had that kind of money, what's the sticker on these things again? We got 1 minute to go here.
Starts at 273 8, but then there's a $5,000 delivery charge. So $278,300, and my press car was $365,000, so it was almost $100,000 with options.
Okay.
And, Tokyo cyan blue, a great color.
Okay, so there's three of us here. It'd be $100,000 each. Who's in? Show of hands. I'm not seeing any hands. I'm just seeing laughter. We're charging. We'll charge it to Michelle. Okay, we are out of time here. Thank you both. Thank you, Jack, for coming on all the way from Seattle. Thank you, Carl, for coming on all the way from the OC. We want to thank Wendell and Master Control, and we want to have you stick around for Rhapsody in Black music that sounds great on your car audio system. And we will see you here next week on The Car Show.
KPFK's Summer Fun Drive begins July 22nd with a powerful message. Zero silence, just waves. In a media landscape increasingly dominated by corporate interests, KPFK stands as an oasis of diverse voices, styles, and generations. In extremely challenging times for California and our nation, KPFK remains your beacon of clarity and connection. For more than 65 years, our mission for peace, justice, and sustainability has never wavered. KPFK's Summer Fun Drive is your opportunity to ensure that we keep making these vital waves. Your financial support funds this community institution, one that refuses to be silenced. Call in early at 818-985-5735, press option 2, or donate online 24/7 at kpfk.org/donate. And speak truth to power.
Many people make KPFK's programs possible, each giving what they can to help ensure the station's future. One way to help is by donating land or other property that you no longer need. Learn more about the advantages to KPFK and to you of donating real estate at kpfk.org.